Welcome along to the Wise Men Say podcast in association with A Love Supreme. Brought to you by myself, Stephen Goldsmith, and the main man, Gareth Barker.
Wow.
Have you been called the main
silent
man before?
The faces in the room at that point said all we needed to know.
Everybody
about
knows
that.
It's true. Don't be hard
thanks,
on yourself.
Thanks very much.
The cricket score didn't materialise over the weekend anyway, nor could Sunderland manage to squeeze out a win. Where does it leave us then? We probably won't find out tonight, but we'll celebrate a 1-1 draw anyway. Nick Barnes from the BBC, Richard Mason from the Northern Echo, going to help us do that. Jovial mood?
Always.
Really?
Especially after your wisecracks.
There wasn't any wisecracks
there. Richard was bragging about a speech that he did, that I witnessed. It was quite good, but he just sat there, stood there silently after that, so maybe he used up all his words for the year.
I've run out of anecdotes now, so it's going to be a long night.
You normally have some prepared written down on a piece of paper.
I've never prepared anything.
I know,
in my life.
I'm just trying to make it sound like all your material's prepared.
Nope.
But where does it leave us all, Nick, do you think? Because the performance was certainly better, but we didn't get the win. Again, it's a very good team. Dick doesn't know what to think. I don't think any of us know what to think.
Well, it was much better. I mean, you have to take that from the weekend, that they couldn't get any worse, and it was a step up. Yes, there are still areas that will concern people. I think the fact that Patrick van Aanholt is still an issue at left back. John O'Shea coming back in, yes, was a very, very good move. It certainly did prove to be the right thing to do, and with hindsight, you know, should have been done for Norwich, but it wasn't. But now he's back in. It looks like he's going to stay there for a while unless Dick Advocaat is prepared to gamble again on trying to establish Kabul and Coates as his first choice centre-back pairing, which is what he wanted to do. But it looks so shaky, and Patrick van Aanholt is so sort of goes so amiss on the left-hand side when they play those two. I think O'Shea has to stay.
Yeah, you can see Richard Courtney, the communication from O'Shea, reining the full-backs in.
Yeah, for me it was from set pieces. Straight away from the set pieces, it looked as though there was something going on. There was a bit of organisation. They weren't just chasing shadows and ball watching. There was a little bit of concentration going on there, which can only come from having a defensive leader. So it was a step in the right direction.
These are the things you can only see when you're inside the stadium as well, because somebody could watch a telly and then conclude that John O'Shea isn't any good.
Yeah,
but you can see him speaking to the defenders,
and you can't if you're not there sense that authority that John O'Shea's got. I mean, I think there's one point O'Shea came across to head a ball out, but he did it with authority. It was almost like there was a real presence about him just putting the ball out into touch, and he commands that area. Now, I know he'll have his critics, and there are times in games, yes, he will get caught. But for those times, you know, there's more than compensated for the fact that, you know, he has actually got a rein on Patrick van Aanholt. He has got a rein on Billy Jones. He has got a rein on Sebastian Coates. And, you know, that is important at the back. And you know, they came away with a point against a very good Swansea team who'd shown, okay, there was, you know, much talk about they hadn't finished their previous two games against 11 players. But you can see with Montero and with AU and that side, they're an accomplished team. They can pass the ball. Pantilimon had to pull off two or three very, very good saves to keep them out.
I thought it was notable that we tried to cut off the supply line to Montero.
I thought Jones did a good job there, actually.
Well, not even just Jones, I think the midfielder's trying to intercept the ball. You could tell that they'd worked on that, I thought.
They did their homework because they knew how Montero had terrified Jan Mat at Newcastle the previous week and what he'd done in the opening game against Chelsea. I mean, that's where your homework comes to the fore, isn't it? That's what it's there for, you know, to how to deal with his players, and you sort of try and do just that.
And that what was glaringly absent from the first two games as well, it seemed.
I think what I noticed was it was a lot more of a back to basics performance, which is where Sunderland have done well in the past. Just not getting ahead of themselves, not trying to play football, not trying to do too much, because
know your limits, lads.
Yeah, well, they do have limitations, you know, within that squad. You've got a couple of players who are capable of changing the game, but Sunderland at the moment are best in a counter-attacking style. You know, soaking up the attacks, keeping it basic, and playing out from the back.
And the narrow 4-3-3 again.
Yeah,
but what a bonus it was that last 20 minutes when Lens suddenly blossomed into the player that everyone thought they'd bought, and suddenly was giving Kyle Naughton, you know, a nightmare at the back for Swansea and starting to run and get into the penalty area.
Now, that was great when you say full-back on his backside, isn't it?
Well, it was just so refreshing suddenly for 20 minutes at the end, seeing Lens, every time he got the ball, you thought, well, he's going to get in the penalty area. And once you're in the penalty area, then you know what can happen? Anything? I mean, no, suddenly nothing. But but he did. I mean, he put a couple of cracking balls across the box, and suddenly the opposition have got to start worrying about staying back and defending and not sort of careering forward and scoring goals.
When we had the momentum after the goal, the penalty decision as well, we don't normally talk about that, but we are looking for positives. We're desperate. We're even speculating about transfers last week. We don't do that normally either. But Sunderland's tails are up then. Do you think that influenced the referee's decision a little bit? Because it was just so soon after the goal.
I just think he had a bad game. I mean, Dick Advocaat was trying to make... not talk himself into trouble afterwards, but I didn't think Neil Swarbrick had a very good game at all. I think the first half, he seemed to be letting Swansea players get away with a lot and Sunderland players not getting away with anything. This ludicrous issue then, him turning out in a white or light grey jersey and then having to change at half time into yellow, it just wasn't his afternoon. And the handball incident, even if he wasn't best placed for it, what was the assistant doing? I mean, it was clear that Ashley Williams had his hands were being raised, they were in the air, and that was a clear-cut penalty. The only thing I'd say about it is that for the fact that Sunderland didn't get a penalty, Pantilimon pulled off two stunning saves.
And you could argue that's his job.
Yes, you can, but I think on another day, with a bit more luck, Swansea may well have scored another one or two goals.
When you're doing your coaching badges, you get told there's no such thing as being unlucky. It's poor technique or it's good play by somebody else.
If you look at the way it was going the game before the equaliser, I think Sunderland had got a bit ragged and
it got laboured.
They'd lost the way a bit. So when the goal came, it just gave them that lift because you felt as though they weren't getting back into it at that point. And then just dispossessing somebody in their own half who's on the ball. And then there was a really good goal. Like, it looked simple, but Lentz's first touch was excellent and a brilliant ball to Defoe, and it was a really good finish. Great tackle by Envia as well, who was outstanding. I thought it was really unusual to see somebody in the midfield who sees the game in that way. You can see why when he was highly rated a few years ago before he had his problems. That seems like Barcelona and things like that were in for him, and I'm not saying he's that good now. I'm just saying you can see it's the way he understands the game and the way he sees things happening, and he's like 2 or 3 yards ahead already. And then when he's got it, his use of the ball was really good.
I think it's interesting. Envia is meant to be the player who's slightly unstable, for want of a better word, and yet it's Lentz who's been picking up the yellow cards. Ironically,
I know. I was worried. Well, were you saying? I think what was playing come on, we were thinking, well, he's definitely going to come on for Lentz, and then
because he'd been booked, and then he got warned twice after that, like two final warnings, and then we were saying, well, you've got to take him off and put Watmore on now. And literally, as we were saying it, you saw Advocaat wave over Watmore, and we were like, well, you'd have to be an idiot not to do that, and then he took the fourth.
Yeah, because that's what I'd said. I said to Benno, who do you think you'll take off? And he went, well, Lentz because of the yellow card. And I said, oh, not Defoe then. No, Lens, because that issue of if he picks up another yellow card and the way that...
Because it looked like he was
Swarbrick's going to go about it. You think,
it looked like he was reacting to it, didn't it? Yeah. It was literally as he got his final one and Dick waved Watmore over and then obviously just changed his mind.
It was a good job he didn't, because we saw the best we've seen of him. That's what, like Nick said, we expected it to see from that player. He had a really good second half, generally... In his general play, but he didn't, like when he sort of hit straps in that last 20 minutes, like you say, it was just every time he got the ball, he thought, he's definitely going to get it. He's probably a bit, well, he'll be disappointed with that, as they say. obviously, he was delighted that he skied that effort, that's what I should say. But yeah, when he cut inside and fired that shot over the bar, probably had a little bit more time to place it, but he just put it over. But yeah, he was like the main influencer from an attacking sense. I mean, that chance where he got down the side and cut it back for Fletcher, and Fletcher probably should have got on the end of it, really. He was stretching, but I think he missed the ball rather than too far away.
Well, is it a concentration thing again? I don't know. I mean, I thought that was a golden opportunity if someone really should have put that in the back of the net.
That's the thing. I mean, the striker issue is still there. I mean, Graham worked hard, he toiled, but there was no real influence on the game from him You know, he didn't really hold it in the first half, and then Fletcher actually did all right when he came on, I thought, in his general play. But you know, that chance across the face, he'd be thinking, you know, I don't know, like 2 years ago, he probably.
Do you guys think Fletcher's played well? Because I was speaking to some people after the game, and it was splitting opinion. I have to say,
I don't think he played badly. I heard, you know, people, as you say, you know, it just seemed to polarise opinion. But I, you know, I think like Graham, he worked hard. But I think, you know, the issue is ultimately that Dick Advocaat wants a striker. He wants someone who can score goals and
hold the ball up.
But you can see, you can see the mould of the striker that other clubs sign is the player that. There was a guy actually before we came on who was having a go at us on Twitter because of. Me specifically, because of our criticism of Defoe, and I was reiterating the point, it wasn't really criticism of him as a player, to criticism of the situation that we found ourselves in, where we've gone big on this player who wasn't really right for the system. And you can see the kind of player that you need now if you're a team like Sunderland, you play 4-3-3, is like Wilson at Bournemouth or Rondon. I mean, when you look at his performance, yes, it's one game and you shouldn't get carried away, but you look at him and think he's the kind of player that Sunderland need in the centre forward, without doubt. Someone with pace, he can hold it, strong, big, broad, tall bloke. You know, imagine him getting on the end of stuff.
That said, though, about Defoe, I mean, you're right, we haven't criticised him. I mean, we have also said on the show that we would have went down if it wasn't for Jermaine Defoe's goals last season. What I noticed in the game was he didn't seem to have to put, you know, the effort in last season when we were staying up, and he was like almost a left back at times and stuff like that. It didn't seem it was necessary for him to do
well,
that.
It, should,
that
have, well, the it set... should have been for the goal, shouldn't it?
Okay, yeah, but what I mean is for the I think that he perhaps the centre midfielders had a part to play in that, because there's more presence in the middle of the park now would allow him to steer further up. And to be honest, I thought had somebody turned up and never seen Jermaine Defoe play before, I don't think they would have guessed that he didn't play in that position.
You're right, he doesn't get back as much as he was at the end of last season when he was coming back into the full-back positions. But you're still seeing him out wide on, you know, left or right on the touchline in midfield, having to come back for it and then making runs into the centre. So, you know, there's still that element. And is that because Patrick van Aanholt's, you know, that issue down that left-hand side, and Jones covers the right wing a little bit more effectively than perhaps is happening on the left? But Defoe's role has changed. But I think the games we've seen, you know, it's a difficult one, isn't it? Because he's got two goals already now in three games. And, you know, it took him how many games since in January through to the end of the season to get four goals or whatever it was. So you could argue that at the moment, you know, he's doing his job in the role that Dick's got him playing, even if he's not 100% sure that he's happy playing in that position.
Well, certainly should embrace that,
well, that's
well,
the thing.
That's what we're
saying. If he wants to have a future in the Premier League, I think, in systems that don't suit him, he's got to embrace this new position. Otherwise, he drops a level.
He'd have to drop a level. If he thinks he's going to go and play up front for somebody, it's not going to be in the Premier League, is it?
No, well, you look at, you know, 19 out of the 20 clubs probably play with either one up top or this kind of inverted 4-3-3 system, which is essentially two wingers either side of a lone striker. You're not going to see a two-man, an old-fashioned, little and large style partnership. Now, even at somewhere like Man City, that often play 4-4-2, they're not going to play a big man next to a small man because it's going to be better standard as well anyway.
He said he tried it the other week. I can't remember who it was against, but he tried it.
It was against Man City, and he said it was a mistake.
Mm-hmm. You can't do it now.
Funny enough, it's the issue that Steve Bruce always had playing Arsenal, that you couldn't play a four-man midfield because you'd be overrun. You had to pack the midfield to stop Arsenal taking you apart.
I think now, you know, for teams like Sunderland, it's default now, 4-3-3. Some clubs are playing a diamond, and like Leicester play a bit of a diamond, and I know West Ham have played the diamond, but I mean, they played the diamond on Saturday and conceded four goals. You know, that being outnumbered in midfield, that extra man, it makes a massive difference. And Man City, you know, when they play above the Premier League level, when they play five in the middle, they always look a lot better than when they play 4-4-2 and they get destroyed. So it's that pattern, that's how it works. And, you know, since Defoe came in, we've been finding a way to try and accommodate him. And Advocaat's the only manager probably who said, right, well, this is the way we're going to play. You've got to play this way, and that's just the way it has to be.
That might have made a difference on his mentality as well. Now, if he's sort of accepting that now, where previously he might have been out there sulking a little bit or whatever. Not that his performance was indicated he was sulking last season, because he was running himself into the ground, wasn't he? So that's a little bit harsh, perhaps. But I just thought that he looked like he embraced it a little bit.
I don't think you're going to kind of see him stropping off down the touchline, because he's a professional first and foremost. But I think, you know, when you drift inside like that, Dick Advocaat seemed to be happy with the fact that he was drifting inside from a wide position. But that does bring defensive problems. But as you say, having a midfield three behind them in Rodwell, Umvier and Catamol kind of protects that to an extent.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And it may just be that at the moment Jermaine Defoe's got other things on his mind, you know, the shopping and who's going to be pets
and
everything.
He's having his own transfer turmoil.
In place, then
it's a decent annual salary for that, though, isn't it?
Is it 60 grand?
Well, yeah. In London,
well, haven't been
24/7.
He said most of it could be done online. So,
talking your shopping, Jermaine.
Haven't been knocked back for the in-house chef for John Joe Shelby, the job I went for in the summer and didn't get a reply from. I think I might be interested in this one.
In that,
You mentioned John Joe Shelby there. I'm gonna try and come up with a segue here. Yeah? We were praising John Joe Shelby and his performance. Exactly the kind of centre midfielder Sunderland need, you think, to complement two of the three that played on Saturday. Gareth and I again were sitting there saying, you can see that there's a team in here, and if you added to Envia and possibly Catamol or Rodwell, because Rodwell played quite well, an attacking midfielder, somebody who likes to pull the strings like John Joe Shelby, that would make a huge difference to us. It would just transform us totally as a team. And we go from a team, I think you're worrying about relegation.
Well, that's a player.
To a team,
I mean,
you think you're going to be fine.
If you think Shelby is technically, he is an attacking midfielder, isn't he? And that's what Dick Advocaat is looking for. But it's finding that one, isn't it? It's
finding,
but as you said already, you know, you're going to have to pay 8, 9, 10 million pounds.
But you say that.
Or,
I mean,
if
this fee for De Guzman at the end is, what, 5 million euros or whatever, I mean, that's a... Considering, I mean, he's played at, like, a good level all his career. When he was at Swansea, he looked very good. I mean, he went to Napoli. I'm sure weren't they Champions League last season or season before. I mean, that's not... He's not playing for a rubbish team. That's a player with pedigree that they're going to bring in. And then you think, for 5 million euros, the amount of money that's splashed around... you know, for English players and stuff like that, and you think, you know, why aren't those deals being done by ourselves more often? And then you look at it now, I mean, the agents come out today and made the quote saying, you know, he needs a bit more time to decide on it because of this, that and the other. And it's like, well, now the Sunderland news has hit the, you know, general public on Friday, was it? You know, he's had 4 days to try and wheedle out, you know, some more potential suitors. I mean, Bournemouth, I don't know if that's more or less appealing than Sunderland. I mean,
well,
it might
part
be a toss
of it is
of the
because
coin.
Sunderland had a poor start, and and you know, Dick Advocaat was the first to admit that it is harder now, 2 weeks in, to attract players because of the start that Sunderland made. They are, you know, they look like a struggling club. Well, Bournemouth had a fantastic start.
You know, they lost the first two, though, didn't they?
Well, unlucky, weren't they? I mean, you know, you look at the way they started, and look at the way they. You know, they performed against West Ham. You know, to players, they probably look a better bet.
You'd like, but at the same time, you'd like to think that players aren't just looking at two or three games and making football decisions. I mean, we've talked about players taking responsibility for the moves before, especially when Craig Gardner was the example that we used when he moved to Sunderland. You know, Bruce wanted to play 4-4-2, and he's been playing as an advanced attacking midfielder in like a 4-5-1.
At what point,
like
can
an
they,
old 4-5-1 as well.
Do they
like
stop listening to the
flat
agent and say, "Well, which team am I going to fit into here?
Yeah.
How am I going to play?"
And you look at
it, would be nice
if
football.
You look at someone like
De
Guzman, is you could just pop him there. You could just pick him up by the head and dump him in there and go, "There you go, enjoy yourself." And he'd have a great time. We'd have a great time, Jonathan, if you're listening. Come over.
I may be being a bit cynical here, but I don't think footballers, if they're looking at numbers, they're not going to be looking at 4-3-3 or 4-4-2.
They should be. That's what we're saying, though.
4-3-3.
Yeah,
4,333.
Lots of money
per week.
Yeah,
per day.
433 an hour. £433 an hour or something.
But I mean, it's just, I know we need a centre forward and arguably a couple of defenders, but for me, it's been that midfielder for so long, and Envia does help. But if you have a situation where you have Envia plus one other, you then have Rodwell, again, a mention I thought was very good at the weekend. Rodwell, Catamol and Larsson playing for one place. Any last ounce of complacency surely goes out the window then, if those three guys are playing for one place, doesn't it? So it's a win-win, isn't it, situation.
That's well, I think Larson's always going to be used more sparingly this season anyway. I mean, that was, you know, the basis of the three-year contract, wasn't it? You know, to make it more appealing to him was we spread out the sort of payments. They'll be the same. You'll make the same money over 3 years as you'd have made in perhaps your one-year contract. But the sort of hint there is you're going to be used a little bit more sparingly, a bit like Wes Brown, you know, sort of having the year contract. You could be a very useful player and you might have to play here and there, but can't see you playing week in, week out.
And the fact that Larson was the fact that Larson
didn't play at the weekend, I think this sort of you can see the road that Advocat's going down with that one.
Well, it's a logic, isn't it? You know, it's a logic behind the way you want to play and putting players in positions where they fit. I mean, you can argue, yeah, he's playing Defoe out of position, but the only reason he's playing him out of position is because he can't play him where he wants to play him. You know, he's picking Graham and Fletcher up front who, you know, just don't score goals anymore. I mean, Fletcher's got the pedigree in the past, but, you know, he's had injury problems, yeah, fair enough. But he just, you know, you have to see, he's not a goal scorer anymore like he used to be, he just isn't. The fact is that he's gone in that department. So he's willing to pick two players who don't score. I mean, Danny Graham, who, you know, God love him, he tries, but he's not, like, he hasn't really got the quality. Hasn't scored a goal at the Stadium of Light for Sunderland. He signed in 2013 in January. I mean, that's quite astonishing, really. I mean, and he's getting picked up front ahead of Defoe. And it's because he wants players who can play a certain way in his system.
Yeah, he's the right kind of forward. Just he's not quality. He's not.
He's not,
right.
He's not the quality.
Yeah, but it does help sort of shape the side when he plays. Certainly, because we were saying, I mean, he got a standing ovation, didn't he? Because he puts everything into it. And again, just observing the game, the shape of the side looked right because he knows what kinds of runs to make, where to position himself. Just the only issue is when he gets it, he isn't quite good enough. His touch isn't there. He gets muscled off the ball sometimes a little too easy. Or maybe not even muscled off the ball, just the defenders read the game a little quicker than him.
I think defending from the front is quite an important skill, and that's what he did. I haven't looked at the stats, I don't think he made any kind of forward movement in that game. I don't think I can't remember whether he shot or not. He might have stabbed one wide at one point. But
yeah,
going forward, you don't think, oh, he's a threat, but you think, oh, he's going to work hard, he's going to hold the ball up, he's going to bring other players in. And when you've got a midfield behind him in Lenz and Vier
Rodwell, I guess Defoe technically. In
yeah, Defoe coming in there as well. There's players moving in and around him. So to speak, there's players moving around him who he can bring into the game.
And in him as well.
In him.
Afterwards, if he scores.
Don't be proper using in and around.
Well, Andy Townsend is not around anymore, is he?
There's a Andy Townsend quote in the blurb for the podcast. So that's fitting. So well done.
Is it?
Just says better Clive.
Better Clive. See, not a lot of people might get that reference.
A bit
niche, isn't it?
I don't think it's niche.
It's obscure. I don't think it's niche.
Anyway,
now on the subject of
that,
we're all on the subject of banter. Do you want to do your joke that you did mid-match?
I could, but it might fall a bit flat because of the context, isn't there?
Provide the context if you like.
Yeah, Eder, the footballer, Brazilian, is he? Brazilian,
Portuguese,
same thing, really. It's just a boat ride. Share the same culture. He came on and I wondered if he was good in the air.
You haven't said who?
I said it was Eder.
Eder, did you?
I wondered if he's good in the air.
He's going to fall horribly flat.
Yeah, I'd say it's no context. You've sold us down the river, Stephen. So you got rubbish jokes, so you're trying to make my good joke sound bad.
I didn't try and make any jokes.
Well, I know.
Stayed away from it.
I know. This is the problem. But anyway, shall we talk about the football?
Yeah,
I'm trying
to think. Yeah, segue us back into the conversation then.
Speaking of awful, Jack Rodwell was a lot better, wasn't he this week?
He was.
Let's single him out for some praise because he probably deserves some for doing what you saw, I think, with him this weekend. What gone was the
bare minimum of what you expect from him.
Well, maybe not that, but just that grit that he wanted to battle with individuals in the middle. Like too often,
aggression.
Too often he's like meekly sort of like just gets losers at 50-50. and he was, you know, harassing people. I mean, he does pick up quite a few yellow cards, and they're usually for stupid things, so I'd rather he picked up yellow cards for, you know, being a bit nasty and doing something, you know, like Catamore, where he absolutely sliced Eo in half, which was sort of quite enjoyable in a way. Like, obviously, he wouldn't want him to be injured, but it was quite good. It got the crowd up.
I haven't seen that challenge firsthand. I thought, I'd never yellow. That's all the reason.
Yeah,
it's gone through the back
yellow.
Of him.
Yeah, it's a yellow. But, Swansea as well, they would. I mean, Gary Monk complained about the referee.
Can you believe it?
He's got a bit of the Mourinho's about him. Monk, in his way he sees the game sometimes, like, just says stupid stuff. Like,
I couldn't believe what I was hearing when he said at the end, like, of the game, or the ref gives, he was on, he gives, let someone get away with far too much stuff. And I was thinking, that was the other way around, surely.
Well, I was thinking it was the other way around. I'm not sure why he was.
I was saying, Nick,
bearing in mind how many bookings there were for Sunderland players and
last year,
Swansea.
Last year, he blamed the length of the grass. Do you not remember that? He said it drew 0-0 and he was like, oh, the grass was too long, so like to stop us playing or something like that. It's like, come on, don't be daft, get on with it.
Steve Cotterill said that today when he visited Sheffield Wednesday in the first game of the season for Bristol, as if Bristol City were like, you know, Chelsea or Real Madrid. Oh, the grass was a little bit long for us.
Yeah,
he's just come up from League One.
Prestigious ground like Hillsborough as well.
Yeah. Well, they won the league though, didn't they? So, you know, can't slag him off too much. Well done, him.
Maybe he's finally starting to come good.
Michael's with all those badges.
Michael's a big fan of him. Mm-hmm. He always used to say that he thought he really rated his coaching sessions, and then like Howard Wilkinson came in and
brought
the mood down with his duck videos or whatever it was I used to play. Geese. Was it geese or duck?
Just a formation of geese.
Just a formation of geese. Everyone's got that video in the collection.
Michael said it wasn't such a bad idea because somebody was using it in the Ryder Cup. I can't remember who won the...
That's golf. It's different.
Yes, I know, obviously. One of the recent Ryder Cups.
Individual sport.
One of the captains in the last couple of years. Honestly.
Is that what it was?
He used it as an example of how to do teamwork. He used that analogy.
Maybe Dick used it because he was saying that the players were playing as individuals, and then he put that on and now they're playing as a team. Maybe that's what... He should have done that, maybe, if he's listening. Maybe he could take that on board.
maybe.
Can you see that, Nick?
I'm struggling with this concept.
No, I know.
I'm struggling.
I said Gareth was a mere man. I think it's just gone really fast. I'm just thinking
that our goose formation is falling apart here.
I think that
they're splitting off and going in different directions.
Stephen's ruined the podcast by making us do that joke, and it's really brought the mood and the quality down.
I know. We got you in to do most of the talking anyway. Nick, you normally talk for us all.
Geese and duck are all well and good, but Sunderland might have a problem paying the bill.
Oh no, that is. Disgusting. It's really bad, that is. This might be the worst podcast we've ever done.
Sunderland have a problem paying the bill, Nick? Is there an issue there, do you think? Give old fans some positive news. Potential bills then. Is there any money?
There isn't any money, basically, at the moment. This is what the whole issue about the transfer window is around, about, you know, the fact there isn't any money. You know, Dick wants to ramming it home that while they've bought Lens, you know, every other club has bought four lenses, bifocals, and
it's just getting worse and worse.
But he would love to see Sunderland spend £30 to £40 million and buy four more quality players. And as he pointed out about the weekend, you know, you can see what Lens brought to the game and what Mvia. Although Mvia was a free transfer, he said, you know, it was a rare quality signing, and they've got a bit of a gem if it works out with Mvia. For basically nothing, but that's the difference, you know, that the squad at the weekends having to work really, really hard and play to the best of their ability. But if you've got three or four Lens quality players in your squad, you've taken so much more pressure off the team as a whole because of what they can do and what, you know, they can bring to the team.
How many do we think realistically you could come in? Two?
Two, I would have thought. I mean, but the way things are going this week, two, I think they'd be struggling to get three at the moment. You know, striker and attacking midfielder are
the two positions are strengthened first. Does everybody agree with that, or would
are the two? Well, but what's happened in the last fortnight, of course, is left back has become a concern, and Advocat's made it quite clear that if Patrick Van Aanholt, if it's becoming clearer and clearer that he's not going to actually grow into that role and become a left back, then they will have to buy a left back. But at the moment, striker and attacking midfielder are the two. If something miraculous happens with the chequebook, then you'd hope that maybe he could attract three or four. But this is the whole issue again. You know, we were talking about De Guzman in attracting players to a team who are in the bottom three of the Premier League.
I mean, I guess the slight advantage they might have with De Guzman is that, you know, Dick is a Dutchman. Well, Lenz is a Dutchman. You'd think Lenz would have had a word. You've been on the phone.
The
and,
Dutch
well,
connection's
hopefully
clear
going, like,
at the
please
moment.
Come.
All the players being linked are largely Dutch. So there's going to be, that's always going to be the thread, isn't it? But the fear is then, you know, what happens if the window shuts? Dick hasn't got the players in. He decides that enough's enough. Who comes in then has to pick up the pieces. And that's completely, you know, the mindset of the Dutch players then. Does that change because they've signed because Dick was in charge and they like that Dutch sort of feel to the squad?
We're the club who are going to salvage Sky Sports coverage of the transfer window, aren't we? We're going to be going, like, to the last minute, aren't we? Yeah. Because we can't not bring in players in those positions. So they're going to have a list and they're going to be working down that list as the night goes on. Because that's kind of, we were saying, it's jumped the shark a bit, that at the Sky Sports coverage of the transfer window. And suddenly they're going to salvage that.
Well, and it's a 5 o'clock cut-off as well, so...
Is it five, is it?
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
That's not as exciting to start with, then, is it?
That was the other issue this year, isn't it? Because it's now September the 2nd and not the 1st anyway. And it's a 5 o'clock finish.
I think that I'd like to think that they'll have stuff done before then. I mean, I know what you're saying about working the way down the targets and stuff, but
De Guzman's going to sit there until the last possible opportunity for a start, isn't he? If he thinks there's other Premier League clubs in for him, he's going to come to England, surely. And you would
just
imagine he's going to sit somewhere
around,
central.
Maybe ask
Darren Bent where he stayed in Birmingham in that hotel that time.
Get another Mungo's car. Get a little trip around.
But, you asked the question about money, is there anything available? The other issue is, in this week, they're going to have to try and shift some players.
I mean, Jack Arini's probably going.
Jack Arini's probably going to go. They'll want to get Bridcut out. They want to get Buckley out. Roberge.
Championship clubs might come for those two.
They may do. I mean, and there's obviously been, you know, sniffs of interest from various clubs. I think Cardiff have been linked with Buckley, haven't they? And Leeds were linked with Buckley. Bridcut again. I mean, the issue will be the players' wages at the moment, and you know, that will deter clubs at the same time that those players won't want to leave because they're on good money, which they won't get in the Championship.
They'll be good players in the Championship. Like Buckley would be a good player in the Championship, a good winger.
He was a good player in the
Championship. I think, you know, you have to go back over the years and see the careers that the likes of Daryl Murphy, Ross Wallace, a number of other players have forged themselves in the Championship.
Richard's the Championship expert in the room, covers the Championship. None of us do. Experts pushing it, but you cover Championship games.
I'm fairly adept, I could say, yeah.
Oh, sorry, on the defensive.
No. Well, I was kind of touting Daryl Murphy around a few. I wasn't touting
Murphy,
but I was suggesting
Agent Mason.
If you're looking for a striker who scores goals, Daryl Murphy.
So when you didn't get the John Joe Shelby chef's job, you became Daryl Murphy's agent.
Is
that why you didn't get that move to the Premier League this summer?
Yeah, because I was representing him.
You see, you're better off here. That would be funny, wouldn't it? If Murphy came back as a centre forward.
Funny is not a word I would...
It would be quite funny, though. I mean, if Sunderland were going... If a club's going to do something like that, it's probably going to be Sunderland, isn't it?
And then he'd come back and say he's got unfinished business.
The vision I had was that all this link... Someone said, I can see Sunderland signing Andre Gray. And I said, no, Sunderland being Sunderland, they'll make a mistake somewhere. It'd be Andy Gray comes back.
Oh, God. Yeah. Please, no. No.
Whenever I see Gary Hooper, I always think he's a potential Sunderland player. I don't know what it is.
He was
about.
Like, not right, Josie,
he was a link, wasn't he?
Yeah.
I mean, the amount of money that it just goes to show, I guess, the money you don't have to. If you can spend a load of money on players and it doesn't always work. Yeah. Look, Mahrez cost £300,000, I think, French second division, and he scored 6 in 6. And, you know, people are raving about him, so I know it's a small spell, but it's about players. And again, this goes back to what we were saying. You know, not to pick on Defoe, he's definitely got qualities that, you know, he's a Premier League quality player, no doubt about that, but the kind of, sometimes it's better to just say, well, yes, we're going to have to sacrifice certain aspects of a player and look at other aspects. What do we need? We need someone who can hold it. We need somebody who's quick. We need someone who's going to bring other people into play. They should be top of the list for the system that we're playing. It shouldn't
square
be
peg, square
will this score loads of goals? Well, I don't know if the days of players scoring loads of goals in the Premier League are over. Unless you're ridiculous like someone like Aguero or whatever. But
well, you look at the top clubs and they all spread the goals around, with the exception of, you know, well, even Chelsea, they spread the goals around themselves. You know, even though Costa was their top scorer, he wasn't taking all of the chances.
The 20 goal a season striker's long gone. It's 10-12. If you get 15 out of a player in the Premier League
last season, 12-13,
I tried. Did he? Quite a few. Yeah. Was it 16 or 17?
It may well be. I'm just thinking, but maybe higher than that. But I mean, it's, you know, classic sort of centre forward, wasn't he?
Charlie Austin's another one I wouldn't be sure in a front three, but in the middle of all.
No, I wouldn't either.
He would like to be paired.
Yeah, he's a 4-4-2 striker. Mm. Although he's probably got a bit more about him than some. He could probably be adapted, but at the same time, it's like, do you want to waste your time? Do you want to waste your time? You know, trying to make something.
Charlie Austin's one, isn't he? He's the kind of player, right? Whoever takes a chance on him, he'll go there and he'll score loads of goals, and everybody will say, "Oh well, you know, it was always there." If he comes to Sunderland, it'll be rubbish. We all know it.
Guarantee.
Yeah, play him on the wing.
I think Sunderland have just got deadline day 5-5. Michu signs. That's what's going to happen.
Well, Nicholas Bender was the left wing one under Steve
left
Bruce.
Field.
Left field one.
Yeah.
Didn't play on the left wing either. The left field one from Steve Bruce, wasn't he? Because he wasn't exactly the kind of striker.
If he had a yard extra pace,
but then he did. You know, he got one in three. And
I like Bender.
That's the sort of player he was. I think it was because
he comes so deep for the ball, where he had Sessegnon playing just behind him. So we were thinking, we're going to go and get a striker again with somebody going to hold the ball up, perhaps. And
I'm talking about Azerbaijan in the office today, you know, I'm thinking that was an off the wall one as well, wasn't it? But I mean, he did a job, I suppose. And
well, I mean, he was what rated, but you know, there might be political.
That was where, do you know, when people talk about like where clubs like Stoke are and they make the big profile signings, but that's where we were at the time when we signed Sean. Yeah. We were in a position like Stoke are now, where we could go and sign players like that, and we just went backwards, haven't we?
I think the frustration with Advocaat at the moment is that he said, and he's not making any secret of it, if he had control of the budget, he would have spent it differently, knowing that next year you're going to get a share of 5 billion of TV money. And I can understand Ellis Short being a little bit reluctant to break the FFP regulations, but then again, it could be worth a gamble, knowing that how much they're going to lose out on if they get relegated. And so far, Sunderland have spent quite a bit of money just to stay where they are, maybe finish even lower than that.
I mean, they're going to have to be clever about the way, if they're going to spend a lot of money, they'll probably have to do something where they say, "Oh, we'll pay, buy someone for 10 million, we'll pay you like 5 now and then 5 next year." But why would a club in England accept a deal like that?
But that's the deals they have been doing, isn't it? And that's what's put them in the trouble they are now, because they're still paying for your Mavriases, your Alvarez's, or what. I mean, that's another issue that's got to be resolved.
I mean, we could end up paying over a period of time.
Could
end up with Alvarez.
Yeah, well, they could do.
I don't know if that has to be resolved before the window.
Put that out of my mind and forget about that.
I think it looks like it's never going to happen.
It's not going to happen. He's not here.
He's just on holiday and he's having a lovely time.
When you see him on the side of the pitch, that's not him. That's not Alvarez.
Yeah, I don't know where he's gone.
Cut out.
Shall we talk about exit tomorrow?
In a couple of minutes.
In a couple of minutes.
We've only got a couple of minutes, I'd say.
Your hometown team, aren't they?
Well, they are technically my hometown team.
Are you excited?
Very.
You seem enthused. Was it the first time you've ever commentated on Sunderland versus Exeter?
This is the first time I've commentated on Sunderland versus Exeter. I have commentated on Exeter before on a number of occasions when they used to play Carlisle in the old fourth division and the league, whatever, anyway. and I used to report on Exeter many, many years ago when I was at home.
So were you hoping for...
I was hoping for a trip to St James's Park. I covered Newcastle. I did do a game at St James's Park, the real St James's Park. But it was a friendly after the end of the season when Bobby Robson took Newcastle down there for a game. But this will be the first time, Sunderland Exeter.
You want Exeter to win? Exeter to win?
It's not a case of want, they probably will.
any threats from Exeter?
Well, there will be a threat from Exeter, only on the basis that over the last few seasons, Sunderland have always struggled at this stage in the League Cup when they've played lower league opposition.
And, we got the final 2 years ago.
Even then, MK Dons.
But we got through it. Josie got us through that game.
And so Exeter will pose a threat because they keep the ball down, they pass it, and they've got some young players with pace. They've got Ryan Harley, who played for Brighton when they beat Sunderland 1-0 that year in the League Cup as well.
In the League Cup where Sessegnon plays.
Clinton Morrison, he's not a starter, really? But he's assistant manager, but he's on the bench. He's there.
That's one person I would not have expected to go into management.
He's assistant, isn't he? But then, so they've got a threat. I mean, they aren't a goal machine, Exeter. They're not, there is an Achilles heel in Exeter's setup. It is up front. They've got a young lad, Tom Nichols, who was their leading scorer last season, 21, 15 goals. Alex Nichols alongside of him. But they're not made, for goals, and they don't get that many through midfield. But they do play nice football.
Mm.
Okay.
Disappointment that Watmore's not in. I think that's been the theme.
Well, I'm surprised. There's been big debate today about, why hasn't he played him? And there's lots of, reasons why he may not have decided to play him. But I think it's an opportunity miss, because I think Exeter is an opposition that he's more than capable of playing against, because he's played the under-21s in pre-season against league opposition at that level. And it's arguable that the under-21s mm-hmm. team is as good as a League 2 side anyway, and I think it is an opportunity missed.
Anybody listening to the podcast after Tuesday has now switched off, haven't they? Because they'll know the result.
Well, I think they would have switched
right
off.
Or wrong we
yeah,
were.
I would have switched off long, about 27
somebody's,
minutes.
Somebody's broke a leg or something. And
well, I think.
Oh, we've got Newcastle.
I'm sticking my neck out,
round.
But I think because with the team that Dick Advocaat's going to field, it will be too strong for Exeter. And Sunderland will go through, but I don't think, I think it
obviously
will be.
It's going to help because we haven't won yet. So the players are going to want to get that first win, aren't they?
Yeah,
regardless
that's part
of who
the reason
yeah.
Feel, why he's like, fielding that team. And
it was like that game against Cambridge 10 years ago, maybe a little bit longer, where they hadn't
7-0.
Won. Yeah, hadn't won any games that season, so they went down to Cambridge and took a full strength team and beat them off the park, and it didn't work, did it?
No, they lost 3-1 at Arsenal the following Saturday, and then Peter Reid got sacked.
So it has an effect.
So great.
The other side of the coin is that, like, for a team like Exeter, the cup is important because they haven't got any. I mean, we talk about having no money. I mean, the team's made up of free transfers. They haven't got. They're a community club. They're owned by the supporters. It's a supporters' trust. They've actually clubbed together every season. They bought a player, Joel Grant, the Jamaican, they bought in from Yeovil this season. So
Jamaican side, no, he wanted to. I'm sorry.
And so the cups are important for teams like Exeter because it's an income stream. If Exeter come up and do well and they cause a shock, it's money for them.
This has got romantic scalp written all over it.
Romantic scalp?
Yeah. Well, fan run club, you can see,
like
David
a herbal essences advert.
Let it not be forgotten that Exeter went to Manchester United and drew 0-0.
I think as well, they might, with them not playing what well, or there might be some political.
I think there is.
It's like going, I could play him, but I don't really want to because I want you to spend some money on a player that I want to put
part
there.
Of it as well, coming on against Norwich and Swansea is, let's take Swansea at the weekend. Swansea bring on Adair, £5 million. We bring on Duncan Watmore.
That would have been a better time for you.
Do you think he's good in the air?
Who, Watmore?
There you go. See, everyone laughed at that. It worked. Right. It worked that time. We'll take that middle section out of the programme
We're going to go out on that, unless somebody's got something that.
Yeah, we should. I did ask if anybody wanted questions on Twitter and stuff, and I haven't brought Twitter up on the screen, and my phone's in the other room charging.
We'll save them for the end of the light on Thursday.
Hopefully they're still relevant.
If they're relevant, yeah.
We might be assessing a meltdown.
Is that lad, the lad didn't get back in touch about the dog's head thing anyway, did he?
The dog's head? No, he didn't actually. Mm. He mustn't have listened.
I'm trying to think where this one's going.
We'll wait with interest over that one. All right. To Exeter then, or maybe we've already played, depending on when you're listening to this. Aston Villa next, isn't it, after that?
Mm. Yeah.
Oh, great. Okay.
Hit Carvery, though.
There you go. All right.
So look forward to.
Thanks for listening. Over and out.